Let's move on to pancreatic pathology, chapter 16. We'll start off with inflammation of the pancreas. Two major categories here. The first is acute hemorrhagic pancreatitis. You should know the etiology. In the United States, the two most common causes are gallstones and alcohol. There is a list in your handout of other things that can cause it, like hypercalcemia, drugs, shock, scorpions, things like that nature. All of these things have in common damage to the pancreatic acinar cell, activating the pancreatic enzymes. The clinical presentation for pancreatic problems tends to be very similar on the exam. It tends to be a stabbing mid-epigastric pain, which radiates to the back. That's classic. These patients can also develop shock, and they tend to develop hypocalcemia. The calcium becomes deposited in these areas of pancreatic hemorrhage and necrosis. On laboratory examination, there will be elevations in amylase and lipase within the serum. On gross examination of the pancreas, what will you see? You'll see liquefactive necrosis. Remember, from all the pancreatic enzymes digesting away the tissue. They also digest away the blood vessels, so you tend to see a lot of hemorrhage in acute pancreatitis. When the adjacent fat becomes necrotic, it tends to take on a chalky white appearance. We call that fat necrosis. Under the microscope, liquefactive necrosis basically looks like liquefied tissue. You lose all the architecture, and you basically see a sea of necrosis. You can also see a surrounding acute inflammation, and any fat cells in the area are going to also undergo fat necrosis. Let's talk about some of the complications. This is a very serious illness. These patients can go on to ARDS or DIC. They can also develop what's called a pseudocyst, which is a collection of liquefied pancreatic tissue, which the surgeons have to come in and drain. And finally, the pancreas can actually become calcified from dystrophic calcifications. Okay, let's move on to chronic pancreatitis. On the exam, it's always a chronic alcoholic, and it usually occurs because of recurrent bouts of acute pancreatitis. On gross examination, the pancreas tends to be fibrotic, so it'll be very firm and it'll have a white appearance. On microscopic, you'll see extensive fibrosis and atrophy of the adjacent parenchyma. You'll also see chronic inflammation. Clinically, these patients tend to present with bouts of abdominal pain. They can have pancreatic insufficiency and malabsorption. They can present with malodorous, fatty stools. They can also develop pancreatic calcifications, again from dystrophic calcifications. And finally, a late complication is diabetes. When you destroy enough of the islet cells, the patient will become diabetic. Let's move on and talk about diabetes mellitus. This is a 5-star topic for this exam. It's a chronic systemic disease which is characterized either by insulin deficiency or peripheral resistance to insulin. For the diagnosis, you need to have a fasting glucose level greater than 140 or a positive glucose tolerance test. Either is diagnostic. Two major types. Let's talk about the less common type. It's more severe, but it's less common. It's called insulin-dependent diabetes mellitus, also known as type 1 or juvenile onset. It only represents about 10% of diabetes, and it tends to affect children and young adults in their adolescence. Let's look at some of the risk factors. It tends to affect patients of Northern European ancestry and patients who have HLA types DR3 and DR4. Let's look at the pathogenesis. These patients lack insulin because you've destroyed the islet cells, especially the beta cells. They're absolutely dependent on insulin. Without it, they will develop a diabetic ketoacidosis and go into coma and potentially die. Let's talk about the etiology. We feel that it's probably a combination of an autoimmune process, which is triggered by a viral infection in a genetically susceptible individual. Let's look at the microscopic. If you did a biopsy of the pancreas, which you shouldn't do in these patients, but if you did, you would see that the islets become inflamed. You'll see lymphocytes within the islets. We call that insulitis. Eventually, the beta cells will be lost, and the islets will become fibrotic and destroyed. Now let's look at the presentation of type 1. They tend to present with the three Ps: polydipsia, polyuria and polyphagia. They can become dehydrated. They can have an electrolyte imbalance. And finally, if they don't have insulin, they go into metabolic ketoacidosis, coma, and they could potentially die. How do you treat these patients? You've got to give insulin. They are dependent on it. Now let's talk about the more common type, type 2 diabetes. It's also known as non-insulin dependent or adult onset. It represents about 90% of cases. It tends to affect adults who are obese. And if you look at the incidence, it tends to increase with age, and it affects about 10 million people in the United States, about half of which are totally undiagnosed, because this is a silent disease. Let's look at the risk factors. Big risk factors are older age, obesity, and there also is a genetic predisposition. Let's look at the pathogenesis. You usually have a relatively reduced secretion of insulin. But the big problem, I want you to triple star, is you have peripheral insulin resistance. Okay, you usually have enough insulin, but your peripheral organs are resistant to it. So look at the microscopic. If you take a biopsy of the pancreas, again, which you shouldn't do, but if you did, you basically see nonspecific changes. You may see a little hyalin, maybe a little amyloid within the islet cells, but they're pretty much intact. Let's talk about the presentation. Many of these patients are going to be asymptomatic. Some of the patients may present with the three Ps, polydipsia, polyuria, and polyphagia. And finally, some patients may go into hyperosmolar non-ketotic diabetic coma. What's the treatment? The initial treatment is usually diet and weight loss. Let's talk about the pathology of diabetes. The big pathology is, since you have so much circulating glucose, glucose winds up attaching to proteins, and what you're going to have is what's called non-enzymatic glycosylation of various proteins, especially blood vessels and basement membranes. So a big part of the pathology occurs in the vascular system. Diabetes is a major risk factor for atherosclerosis. So diabetics are an increased risk for developing MIs, strokes, peripheral vascular disease, and they also develop what's called hyaline arteriolonephrosclerosis in the kidneys especially. That's small vessel disease. Let's talk about the kidney problems. We call that diabetic nephropathy. First of all, the renal artery tends to become atherosclerotic and narrow. Next, they can develop this small vessel disease called hyaline arteriolosclerosis. And finally, they develop glomerulosclerosis. They can develop two types. They can develop diffuse glomerulosclerosis, but the one I want you to triple star that the board loves to test on is called nodular glomerulosclerosis. Other name for that is Kienle-Steel-Wilson's disease. The patient will present with the nephrotic syndrome, and when you did a biopsy, you will see nodules within the glomerulus of PAS-positive material. That's characteristic. What other problems do they get in the kidney? Well, they develop renal failure. They can also develop necrotizing papillitis as well. Let's move on to the eye. All of your diabetic patients you should send for yearly eye exams because they tend to develop diabetic retinopathy. A couple of stages you should know about. The first phase is called the non-proliferative phase. The blood vessels become weakened by the non-enzymatic glycosylation. They tend to dilate aneurysmically, so they get you small microaneurysms. The microaneurysms will rupture. You'll develop exudates and hemorrhages within the retina. What happens next? Well, granulation tissue moves in. We call that the proliferative phase. The final phase is what follows all granulation tissue. You eventually develop a scar. Scars contract. When it contracts, it will actually pull the retina away from the back of the eye. You'll develop retinal detachment and blindness. The other problem that they tend to develop is cataracts as well. Final thing I want to talk about for diabetes is they tend to develop a neuropathy. They develop a peripheral neuropathy. They develop a neurogenic bladder and have an increased risk of urinary tract infections. And finally, they tend to be impotent. Last thing I want to mention to you is since they develop a peripheral neuropathy, they tend to bump their toes, develop small infections, which never heal. because they have peripheral vascular disease as well. So diabetes is the number one cause of non-traumatic amputation. Okay? You can't cure these ulcers, so over time you eventually have to amputate. Okay, let's switch gears and talk about pancreatic tumors now. Let's talk about the benign tumors, the islet cell tumors. The islet cell tumors, remember there are many different cells within the islets. If the tumor is of the beta cells, we call those insulinomas. It's the most common type. It produces insulin. So the patient tends to develop hypoglycemia. They develop tremors, sweating, confusion, and finally insulin coma. If you took a look at the laboratory, they tend to have elevated levels of insulin and elevated C-peptides as well. How do you treat these patients? Well, you treat them with glucose. In fact, these patients tend to be obese because they self-medicate themselves. They tend to eat all the time so they don't develop these symptoms. Okay, let's talk about G-cell tumors. We call these gastrinomas. They produce gastrin. They can also lead to what's called the Zollinger-Ellison syndrome. By definition, this is an increase in serum gastrin leading to hyperacid secretion in the stomach and intractable peptic ulcers. That's the Zollinger-Ellison syndrome. These tumors may arise outside the pancreas. They can be very difficult to treat. And the last thing I want you to remember is they can be associated with the MEN syndrome, multiple endocrine neoplasia, type 1 especially. Let's move on to glucagonomas. Not common on the exam. It produces glucagon. They can develop hyperglycemia, basically diabetes. Let's move on to VIPomas. They produce vasoactive intestinal peptide, and they develop what's called the WDHA syndrome. WD stands for watery diarrhea, H stands for hypokalemia, and A stands for achlorhydria. Okay, let's move on to pancreatic cancer, pancreatic carcinoma. It's the fifth most common cause of cancer death in the United States. The incidence of this cancer, unfortunately, is increasing. It's most common in older individuals, usually between the ages of 60 and 80. And finally, the biggest risk factor is smoking. Let's talk about the presentation. Unfortunately, this tumor tends to be very malignant because it has vague signs and symptoms. It presents very late in the course of disease. They tend to have some vague abdominal pain. They could present with migratory thrombophlebitis. We call that Trousseau's sign, named after Dr. Trousseau, who had pancreatic cancer and actually diagnosed himself because he started to have little venous thromboses. One occurred here. The next day, one occurred here. It was migratory. Okay. The other way this can present, if it involves the head, you can present with obstructive jaundice. Okay, where do they occur? 60% occur in the pancreatic head, 15% occur in the body, and about 5% occur in the tail. Under the microscope, these are adenocarcinomas. They arise from the ducts. So under the microscope, it tends to be a gland-forming tumor. Another thing I want you to remember is that these tumors can produce elevations in serum markers, especially CEA and CA19-9. Last thing is, how do you treat these patients? Chemotherapy does not work. Radiation does not work. Your only chance of cure for pancreatic cancer is surgical resection. And the procedure of choice is known as the Whipple's procedure. Finally, prognosis is incredibly poor. The one-year survival is about 10%. So if you make this diagnosis in your patient, basically you tell them, go see the world, go on a trip, enjoy yourself, get your life in order, because most of these patients don't live more than a year.